This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Dollywood is Dolly Parton's Mountain Dream theme park in Sevier County, Tennessee. On the surface, the concept and even the name might seem a little kitschy and loaded with over-the-top Appalachian stereotypes, but a new book by writer and folklorist Graham Hoppe takes a serious look at the place, and it reveals an attraction that has served as a community and a family up in that area, as well as taking back Appalachian narratives. Graham is a folklorist and a writer. His new book is called Gone Dollywood, Dolly Parton's Mountain Dream. And Graham Hoppe joins us now. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Thanks so much for having me.
Describe it for us. Describe Dollywood.
Dollywood is the largest ticketed attraction in the state of Tennessee. It's a huge theme park and water park, and now a resort hotel as well. It has all the sorts of things you'd expect to find at a theme park: roller coasters, shows, souvenir stores. But it's all kind of has an accent of Dolly Parton. You can see her touch, her fingerprint on everything from the rides to especially the shows and to her museum, which is also headquartered.
Well, if
there.
You didn't know Dolly Parton, talk more about the themes that we would recognize as we got there.
You'll see kind of a mountain folksiness there. You'll see country music is, of course, heavily represented, as you'd expect. You'll see all kinds of nostalgia dating back to the 19th century with blacksmiths, with potters, and all the way up to the 1950s, where you'll see sock hops and hamburger joints. That
That's
kind of
the
thing.
Kind of a theme park we might expect in Tennessee, right?
Absolutely.
But then you told me just a second ago that we're going to see also the fingerprint of Dolly Parton. What is it about her and her life that really comes through in this park?
You see her life story, which is sort of a kind of the ultimate country music origin story. You know, she was born into poverty. She was born in a two-room cabin with many, many brothers and sisters. And her parents were sharecroppers in Sevier County, where Dollywood is located. It's her hometown. It's her home place. And, you know, she grew up and raised herself up and became this incredible country music superstar, which sort of imbues everything with kind of this sense of positivity, this sense of chasing your dreams, of finding yourself, finding your voice.
And there's a replica. She tells that story, of course, in her song Coat of Many Colors, and there's actually a replica of that in Dollywood. Let's get a little bit of that so we can get some Dolly Parton in our ear.
Back through the years I go wandering once again, back to the seasons of my youth, and I recall a box of rags that someone gave us, and how my mama put the rags to use. There were rags of many colors, but every piece was small. I didn't have a coat, and it was way down in the fall. Mama sewed the rags together, sewing every piece with love. She made my coat of many colors that I was so proud of.
Dolly Parton in 1983 with a song that has to be called biographical, autobiographical, Coat of Many Colors. I'm talking to Graham Hoppe, author of Gone Dollywood, Dolly Parton's Mountain Dream. What keeps this park, in your mind, from becoming just a kind of a cliche, a sort of an exploitation of our expectations of country and Appalachian culture?
It's Dolly Parton. It's her presence, her persona, that positivity that she brings to everything, that sense of you know, whether you want to call it realness or authenticity, of sort of genuine caring for her fans and her community. I think if it were almost anybody else who was in charge of this theme park, it would be a theme park. And that's about it.
And that authenticity is really a hallmark of her entire career. Remember, this is a singer, songwriter, actress, pop music star, but has also done a lot of roots music and you know, performed on many other albums that a country and western singer or fans may not have heard, and an exceptional businesswoman and one who most people seem to like very, very much.
That's right.
Through it
yeah.
all, right? I've wondered because I've done, you know, stories about Dolly Parton off and on that come through this studio in various forms, and everyone seems to love her. Now, you wrote a book.
That, yeah.
And so you've even talked to more people. Have you found anybody who's got anything?
Not really. Nothing significant. You know, it would have been, as I set out to write the book, I thought it would be nice to have kind of a counter narrative. That's something you want if you tell a story. You want to have a little bit of tension. You want to hear all voices. And, you know, it's just, as far as I know, it's just not there. I couldn't find it. And So I'm happy to tell the happy story.
It's
Dolly
a good
Parton.
Story. It's just hard to find. She did, and this authenticity, right? She was a sidekick to country music star Porter Wagoner for many years and decided to strike out on her own at a time when, you know, women striking out on their own was not a good idea.
That's right. Well, she was tired of being the girl singer, which is what she was called. That was the role in kind of his review show, in his television show. And she didn't want to be somebody else's girl singer. She wanted to be her girl singer.
Yeah, but again, this is a time. I mean, what year are we talking about here?
We're talking the early 70s.
This is not a time necessarily where striking out on your own is a good idea. There's a little more comfort than it would have been 20 years ago. But being tired of it, because it's a success.
Yeah.
Right? This is a winning place next to Porter Wagoner, and she thinks she can do it. And then her hit song, I Will Always Love You, in many ways was seen as her kind of goodbye, a loving goodbye.
That's right. I mean, she wrote it about leaving Porter's show, and she wrote it about striking out on her own.
Which is to say, and we're going to listen to a little bit of it, that doesn't include any sense of bitterness or rancor. It's about loving, and
That's
it's
right.
about needing to move on. Let's listen. Dolly Parton's 1974 performance of her song, I Will Always Love You. I'm talking to Graham Hoppe, author of Gone Dollywood, Dolly Parton's Mountain Dream. So she's striking out on her own, not a guarantee at all that she will ever become Dolly Parton, and she gets a call from Elvis.
That's right. Well, she gets a call from Tom Parker, Elvis's agent, which I think is important in this story. And they wanted to cover that song, which was already fairly, you know, relatively successful, mm-hmm. especially for Dolly Parton at that time. It was probably her biggest song to date, and Elvis heard it and liked it and wanted to cover it, which in 1974 would have catapulted it into the stratosphere. And for someone who identifies themselves as a songwriter, writing a song for Elvis is no small thing. But the sort of sticking point is that Tom Parker wanted half of the rights to the song. And he said, we'll take all half of the publishing and Elvis will cover it and everybody will make a lot of money and everybody will be happy. And she said, no. She said, I wrote this song and these are my words and I'm going to keep the publishing. And if Elvis doesn't like that, he can walk away. And Elvis did. And at the time, she wondered if she had made a bad mistake. Though, as we know, you know, Whitney Houston covered it and it became one of the most successful pieces of music in history.
Yeah, it really is one of the top in terms of its success, its financial success. And of course, she stood to make millions anyway.
Yeah.
Even as the co-writer of that
right.
song, as you say, when Elvis at a time in her career where she wasn't unknown, but it would have really launched her career. And this idea of wanting to hang on to what was hers was,
well, looking back on it, it feels like a very shrewd financial decision, and it ended up being one. But I think even in the moment, just as importantly, it was an assertion of self, yeah. of creative control. And I think that's an important underlying part of her legacy and her persona and what we like about her.
So tell us, why a theme park? Why did she decide to embark on that project at all?
Well, she comes from Sevier County, which is a place that, even hard to believe, even before Dolly Parton, it was a tourist destination. Gatlinburg is perhaps the most well-known city in Sevier County. So she grew up seeing people come to her home and wanting to get a piece of the mountains, wanting to see this natural beauty. So I think that made sense to her. And she talked about how she wanted to be a Smoky Mountain Walt Disney. She wanted to create this fair, this fun festival atmosphere, which is really, it fits with her personality. It's, you know, it's fun, it's light, it's sort of a nice thing to digest. It's a pleasant way to spend time. And I think that's what she wanted to create.
And how involved was she then? I mean, because again, this is going to be a financial, whatever else it's going to be, it's going to have to be a financial success.
It's a business first.
It's a business deal. Got to work. How involved was she in the design?
They say she has her hand in everything, and it really feels true. You know, the restaurants are named after her family members, after stories in her song catalog. Her family members work at the park. You can see her brothers and sisters and cousins performing. You know, she co-owns it with an organization called the Hirshen Family Entertainment, which owns the Harlem Globetrotters and runs Stone Mountain in Georgia and has a theme park in the Ozarks. So they kind of handle the logistic things. But I think at Dollywood, Dolly is kind of the heart and the guide of what they do there.
You talked about the fact that it's good employment opportunity for her family and for Sevier County, right? I mean, it's been a real boon for them.
Yeah, that's something she's proud of. She likes to tell people in interviews, you know, I put a lot of people in my home county to work. There are jobs here. And she's really dedicated to making her home county as best as she think it can be, whether it's building a hospital or promoting literacy or getting people to graduate from high school there.
What do you think it does for those stereotypes for people who go through there in terms of, I mean, you talk about wanting to take back the narrative. Does it have that effect when you go through there?
I think it does. I think Dolly is incredibly adept at guiding narrative. She understands and is completely aware of the stereotypes, and so she kind of grabs them and pulls them in and then redirects them. So there are hillbilly stereotypes, and so often what we see, if you're looking at Looney Tunes or if you're looking at Snuffy Smith, those stereotypes are pushed in a really sort of negative direction. Dolly takes that imagery and I think pushes it in the positive direction. If, you know, Dolly Parton is the smartest person in the room and also a hillbilly, then maybe a hillbilly is not such a bad
thing. Well, there's a great, you reprised that conversation she had with Barbara Walters, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, where, you know, Barbara asked her if I had called you a hillbilly when you were little, what would you have done? And Dolly said something to the effect of, you know, I would probably kick you in the shins, but I guess I'm also a hillbilly. I guess you would have been right.
But that's part of her genius. I mean, even in the way that she has managed to embrace her physique, right? And it was something that was always, I mean, the talk show host would always want to do the guy thing with that, and she wouldn't ignore it. She had this genius of taking it back and saying, you know, sort of looking him in the eye and saying, yeah, and is there anything else, you know?
Yeah, you can find that especially in the early clips of her interviews, like on Carson. She was on Carson a lot. There's a lot of that sort of redirection. And you can tell, you know, she's very young. She's very nervous. It's a big stage, but she never bows down. She never is broken.
Well, that's the striking thing, I think. You talk about somebody who didn't have, there was no guarantee that she was going to become Dolly Parton at any place along the way. No guarantee that she could stay there. She'd been in show business long enough to know your minute of fame is sometimes less than that. What do you think accounted for that poise and that kind of self-confidence and ability to, because again, when we were talking about her physique, it wasn't a kind of bitter, you know, response, right? Never that. It was always done with grace and humor, but in a way that guy had to feel pretty dumb by the time it was all over.
That's right. You know, I don't know how you talk about that there's no guarantee that she would have been in Dolly Parton. It's in part because a Dolly Parton had never existed before and hasn't since. She had to invent it. And to have that kind of drive, that sort of self-awareness, that confidence in self is an incredible thing. And I think it's just something some people are imbued with. I guess that's star power or whatever you want to call it.
Well, but again, it manifests in many, many different ways. And stars are driven by many, many different compulsions. What do you think it was in her case? Again, you focused on Dollywood, but she's a successful business person, but money never seemed to be the focus. Not that she didn't want to make it and didn't know how to make it.
She was very good at making it.
Stardom was something that she achieved at many, many levels, acting, songwriting, singing, but never seemed to attach her identity to any one of those things.
Yeah, I think that's the persona thing. She's Dolly Parton doing all of those things. Those things aren't her. And I think that, you know, stardom is important to her because of what it allows her to do. And, you know, charity is such an important part of her persona, and it has, I think, has become increasingly so. that perhaps that's a motivation that she can change, that she can affect.
Well, and you overheard a conversation, I think, in visiting Dollywood for some of your research that I think maybe illustrates some of what we're saying.
Yeah, that's right. When one of the trips I was there, one of the many trips I was there, I just happened to overhear someone talking to her son, and she basically said, you know, so she's one of us, and she's never forgotten us, and she's done a lot for us. And it rang really true for me. And I don't think that that's an unusual opinion.
What got you, were you a big fan of Dolly Parton, and had you been to the park? What got you interested in writing this book?
I was a fan. I'm a fan of country music, and so she looms large in the landscape of country music. And I just kind of went to the park because I was a fan. I thought it would be something to check off my list. You go to Graceland, you go to Dollywood, you go to these sites, right?
Right.
And I went, and I was surprised by how big the park was, by how important it felt. I was surprised by her presence in the community. It didn't feel to me like any other sort of site where you go to where a famous person has been from. You know, when people ask what Dolly's effect on her hometown is, I compare it to, you know, imagine if Michael Jackson had changed Gary, Indiana, or you know, Bob Dylan in Minnesota. That's what people usually do. They become very famous and they leave.
Yeah.
And Dolly has not been able to do that, or has not wanted to do that.
Graham Hoppe is a folklorist and a writer. His book is called Gone Dollywood, Dolly Parton's Mountain Dream. You can catch Graham at Flyleaf Books in Chapel Hill on Sunday, June 10th at 2 o'clock. Graham, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for being
Thanks
with
so
us.
Thanks so much.
We've got that date at our website, stateofthings.org, and you can find out more about all we talk about at that very same website. Our program is produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, and Amanda Magnus. Robin Copley is our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.